Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Suri Chan is a queer artist who pulls from her migrant roots to tell stories about her heritage, her future, and her identity through her poems. In her book, But I Don't Feel Empowered, which is available through all bookstores, Suri uses illustrations and her words to invite readers into her world, often utilising stories of iconic landmarks and food to enrich the senses even more. In the following interview, Suri talks about where her interest in poetry came from, what being a migrant queer artist means in today's world, and a lot more. She also gives a reading of one of her poems too. To find out more about Suri's work, visit suri-chan.com or find her work on Instagram at Poems by Suri. I'll make sure to stick a link in the show notes for both of those. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like you. Visit patreon.com/thecurb.au where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. If you are unable to financially support us, then please consider sharing this interview with your culture-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on a podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from creatives to a wider audience. New interviews drop on Thursdays with bonus chats appearing on Tuesdays, just like this one. Right, it's enough from me. Here is my chat with Suri Chan. I'd love to start talking about where your interest in poetry started from. Where did your desire to work creatively in poetry begin?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a really good question. So as a kid, I always felt like an artist and I always wanted to express myself creatively in some way. But, you know, coming from an Asian family in Southeast Asia, that was never really an option for me. So whenever like people would tell my parents that I would grow up to be an artist, or my people would tell my parents that I would grow up to be an artist, they would be like, no, she's going to be a lawyer instead. So it was never really an option. So going into uni, I went into like the corporate field after uni, and then after being there for a few months, I was just hit with incredible FOMO, and I thought that if I don't kind of start pursuing my creative work now, I'm never actually going to do it, because, you know, I'm just going to put it off indefinitely. So that's kind of what made me really jump into the creative field.
I know for a lot of people that creativity becomes a sanctuary for them in a lot of ways. And for me, like, I read poetry, and I read poetry because it gives a very unique insight into somebody's culture, their lives, and what they're going through and how they react to the world around them. And so in that way, it becomes a really personal sanctuary. And I'm curious for you, if you can talk about the poetry, your poetry becoming a sanctuary for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. During like, I love that question. That's a really good question. No one has ever actually asked me that before. So let me just have a think. So I often write from a place of like deep emotions. So I'm kind of like, so basically I use it as a way of processing and unpacking trauma and past experiences. Like, for example, I have a poem in the book that's kind of about my relationship with my family and queerness. And my family's quite homophobic, right? So in that poem, I kind of reframed it as underneath all that prejudice, there is kind of love buried underneath there, because it's a poem about an imaginary conversation with my mother. She basically says a bunch of homophobic stuff, and then she basically says that actually I'm saying this because, you know, I'm scared and I'm confused and I just don't know, you know, what the future is going to look like. And so basically that poem reframes prejudice as just confusion and fear. So that kind of was my way of reprocessing that trauma and healing from it, if that makes sense. So often with my poems, I kind of get to the root cause of a feeling or an experience, and I kind of reframe and unpack it. And basically, yeah, that, if that makes sense. But you can ask me.
I think one of the things which I've really appreciated, one of the poems which touched me was one about Mount Fuji and it, the colour of Mount Fuji in particular, where you had this idea of it being a beautiful violet colour, and then going there and seeing that it's not that, and what your expectations are or what has been built up isn't always what the reality is, and it's holding on to a version of what reality is, or a version of fantasy. And it's, you know, you navigate that so beautifully. Can you talk about that, you know, trying to find that balance of reality and fantasy through your work?
I can, yeah. That's a brilliant question. And I love how you described that poem. That's exactly what I was aiming to do, but you articulated it so well. So so with that poem in particular, I feel like as creatives and as artists, it's very easy to have kind of like a rosy-tinted, romanticized view of the world, especially as artists. And I feel like as artists, we are just kind of filled with so much hope. And I feel like we're more likely to get disappointed because the reality doesn't match up with that perfect picture, that perfect like romanticized, idealized version of reality in our head. So I feel like that's what I experience a lot, and in that specific poem, that was largely linked to sexuality and the concept of like coming into my sexuality and realizing why certain experiences in the past, they didn't flow so naturally to me. And yeah, I linked that to Fuji because just going to see Mount Fuji in real life, like I was just so kind of taken aback by how, like, when you see it up close, it's just rock, you know? So that just really surprised me because, like, we have lots of, like, worldwide, like, landmarks, like, you know, Fuji and the Eiffel Tower and just many landmarks. We just have this sort of idealized picture in our head. But when we go there, it's just concrete. It's just rock. And that's just fascinating because it really kind of like, it makes me link that to like identity and things we do in real life. Like, for example, like even our dreams and goals as artists or as people, when we finally get there, it's just a thing. Like, for example, even with my book, I badly wanted to publish a book. And once I published it, that was amazing and that was wonderful. And I went on tour and that was great. But after, you know, like that, I got used to that. It was just like a book and I'm thinking like on to the next book. And you know what I mean? So that's like something that humans in general, we are so quick to kind of romanticize the past and romanticize the future. But somehow we don't really know how to live in the present. So that's kind of that poem is about all those things at once. But
it touches on something which I find really fascinating too, is this kind of expectation of queer identity where you come out and you feel almost like, gosh, I've come out and the world's going to be suddenly very different and changed because I've come out. But actually the change has been yourself. The world's still the same.
And it's
And it's trying to find your space in this new world, which is your world, which is such a personal thing.
Definitely. And I like to think of as queerness as also kind of like returning to, it's like brand new, but also at the same time, it's like returning to almost like an ancient part of myself that was kind of buried over the years and like repressed. So it's like fascinating to think of it like as a new thing, as in the world stays the same, but you are the one that's changed. And that's also like, you know, going back to my hometown, and the hometown's exactly the same. And I actually have a poem about that called My Parents' House, and it kind of frames my parents' house as both a time capsule and a time machine. A time capsule because everything looks the same. Like, they don't change the house much. They don't. So everything's like kind of laid out the same way. But you can see the effects of time, like on their faces, because going back, like after like 1 or 2 years, like you can see like changes on their face. You can see like signs of like aging and that sort of thing. And you can see that change. And also like, so it's a sense of both past and present, and you're kind of like tugging between the both at once, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah. I'd love to talk about the title of your book because I think it's such a, it carries so much weight. And in such, but I don't feel empowered. And that's, you know, for a lot of people, you do things, you go out, you work in activism, you do stuff, and, you know, you expect that there might be some kind of change, or you might feel, you know, enriched or something. But then you come home, and as the title suggests, is like, but I don't feel empowered. And it's, again, because the world around you hasn't changed or refuses to change.
Exactly.
Can you talk about the importance of a title like that for you?
I can, I basically started writing this book when I was really frustrated with empowerment culture, because empowerment culture, while it's really helpful and it's really useful, especially as women, after a certain point, I feel like it doesn't address lots of systemic issues. Because the thing is, like, loving yourself is great, right? But you can't love yourself out of all your problems, because a lot of them are like systemic, you know? So loving yourself is just part of the equation. But the thing about empowerment culture is that they use loving yourself as like the blanket solution for everything. And that can look a lot like toxic positivity. It can just look kind of shallow and dishonest often. So basically, in lots of my confused and kind of sad moments, I basically was thinking, but I don't feel empowered. Like, is that okay to say? Is that all right? And that's how the title of the book came about, actually. It just came from like a thought that just popped into my head. Basically with that, and also I feel like lots of our narratives, the way we kind of frame, coming out of trauma, coming out of difficult experiences, there's kind of always this pressure of coming out better and more beautiful. And then I just feel like as humans, like, maybe it's fine to just be, instead of being better or more beautiful. Sometimes we can just exist and we can just be, if that makes sense. So this book is all about kind of honoring all the emotions, including the negative and messy ones. Because I personally feel there are no good or bad emotions, because all emotions kind of need to be processed and they have a place, because that's part of the richness of the human experience, if that makes sense.
So you've toured around the world with your book and you've met a lot of people and you've got a huge amount of Instagram followers as well. And I'm curious about that, the interaction with people who've read your work, who have engaged with your work. There's something universal about it. You're talking to so many different experiences. What's been kind of your experience of getting to engage with people who've read your work and resonated with them?
Oh yeah, that's a really good question, because that's honestly my favorite part of the process. Because often when I write about my experiences, I personally feel they're like really niche and really personal to me. But when I put it out there, like in the book, on Instagram, or just like reading it on tour, I've come to realize that there's like a universal human thread connecting everyone else, or my readers, with my work. And that's really beautiful, because it makes me feel less alone in my personal experiences. And at the same time, I feel like as creatives and as artists, like, that's often what we strive to do. Because with any work of art or any book or any movie, it isn't just about that story. It's about how it connects to being human and how it connects to the larger community. So I feel like that's honestly my favorite part of my journey as an artist. And basically, I'm always surprised by the comments people say and what people tell me, because a lot of people say that they've kind of like, they've read personal experiences of mine in my book and they've like cried. And that's honestly like the biggest compliment. Honestly, that's the biggest compliment for me. And I'm always like so flattered when people say it. But one thing that really, really surprised me, like on tour and like from book reviews, is that lots of people say they laughed from the book. And that's honestly, that's my new favorite compliment, because I feel like the sense of like, I didn't intend to make it like super humorous, but I feel like that element of like humor that exists in my work and my personhood, that's like, that really talks about like the nuanced experience of like kind of negative experiences, pretty much, because there's always like a sense, not always, but there's sometimes a sense of like humor that runs through that. And that's, I feel like that's my new favorite compliment, because I feel like even though the book is like about not being empowered, right? I like to think that there's a sense of joy running through it still.
You almost need, you know, from some of the heavy things that you go through in life, that we all go through in life, you need to have that release valve of, you know, laughing, of humour, of lightness. For me, that comes through the artwork as well. So I know that you do the artwork for your poetry. Can you talk about building that and adding your personality through the artwork?
Yeah, so with the artwork, when I was young, I started drawing as a first sort of way of expressing my creativity. That was when I was young. And then I stopped doing that for like a number of years, you know, like when I went off to uni and I was working like in corporate. So when I started getting back into, you know, like my creativity and I started pursuing poetry, I started sharing that on social media. And because social media is such a like visual landscape, I thought I needed to have like a visual element to my poems. So that's how I started incorporating my drawings into Instagram, and it started becoming my brand after that. So yeah, that's how that's where I got started.
How has the visual diagrams and art, how has that changed your poetry? Yeah. Has it kind of made you be more expressive in certain ways in your poetry or visual in the words that you use?
I think it basically, I feel like it's more of the words influencing the art than the other way around, because lots of my poems are already really visual, and they often, most of my poems, they come to me as a series of images first instead of words. For example, I'll be like doing like a really mundane thing. I'll be like on a walk or just something really mundane, and then I'll be hit by a series of like visual pictures. Like, for example, I have this poem called A Bull, Mantis and Gay Girl Walk into an Asian Restaurant. So those images kind of hit me. And then as a writer, my job was kind of to assemble those images together to make coherent text, if that makes sense. And then from there, I drew the images. So the images are always like a secondary thing, because my words are already really visual.
I know for some people, your own work can be a bit of a salvation too. And I mean, I'm doing something very different than you. I write reviews, I do interviews just like this one, but I have a complicated relationship with my own work where I'm like, oh, do I like that? Do I not like that? And sometimes, most of the time, I'm like, oh, I don't love what I do, but I do love what I do. How is your relationship with your work? Is there a poem that you have written that means something, like that when you read it back to yourself, that it actually, you know, says something to you? I know that they all do because they're about your experiences, but is there one that you really hold on to that you say, this is something that I'm really proud of?
Yeah, I think it's that one about a bull, a mantis and a gay girl walk into an Asian restaurant, because that one talks about the perpetual tug of war that we go through as like multicultural people. And basically I frame my Western identity as a bull that's really brash and it really wants to scream and say, take me as I am, you know what I mean? And then the mantis is a more sort of like quiet kind of figure that kind of tiptoes around cultural expectations. So in that poem, I kind of see myself sitting at a dinner table in an Asian restaurant, and both the Western identity and the Asian identity are on each shoulder, kind of like being an angel and a devil, but they swap identities in terms of which one's the angel, which one's the devil. And that basically talks about whether or not I want to be frank in my queer identity with my conservative auntie, if that makes sense. So I'm constantly being pulled in either direction by, you know, the Asian side and the Western side. So that one. And I have another one that's called The Well of Generational Trauma. So this one has an image in it. Yeah. So this one's called The Well of Generational Trauma. And this talks about like breaking the cycle you know, as immigrants and as women of color. And basically, this applies to basically anyone who's been the first to do something new in their line, if that makes sense. So you don't have to be like, you know, person of color. You can be like the first person in your family, for example, to work in a creative line. You know what I mean? For example, so it could be anything. So in this poem, I frame generational trauma as like a well that my family has been drinking from for generations. And no one really stops to question the cycle because they're too busy pouring water for the future gens. So I can read a little bit from that. Because I feel like when, when I'm rambling about the descriptions of the poems, I feel like it'll just be clearer to read a second. So this one is called The Well of Generational Trauma. My parents drank from the well. There was no baptism or ceremony. Where I lived, the poison was in the water. I held my breath as they dunked my head in, told me to drink, told me it would be good for me. Our bloodline is tainted because well-meaning elders with loud voices and sharp hands never question what they should have. Grandma worries about what's under the plaster when the poison is in our veins. And yeah, it's a bit longer than that. But basically, the summary of it is that, yeah, it frames generational trauma as like a well that, elders, they keep kind of pouring the cups for the future gens without stopping to realize that the water is toxic, pretty much. Yeah, so that's the hope.
My reading then is that your poetry is a way of replenishing that water with positive water, with clean water, with to remove that toxicity. Yeah. But then for you, as somebody who is putting so much of yourself into your work and working through these things, what do you do to keep yourself mentally healthy?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. And I've never gotten that before. So what do I do? I think I constantly try to have a sense of like self-awareness and kind of unpack like the root cause of a feeling or like a traumatic situation. Like, for example, like, you know, like as humans or like I personally, right, I have a tendency to kind of fall back into old patterns, whether that's with relationships or with unpacking things in art. I have a tendency to maybe ruminate on a certain thing in art or like in a relationship, I tend to fall back in the same pattern. So I feel like what I try to do is I try to, when I'm stuck in an unhealthy loop, I try to think, what's the root cause of this, if there is one. And often the root cause, it stretches back years. It's not always something in the present day. It's always something that often, if it's something that keeps happening, it's often rooted in, you know, childhood or like past experiences. So I often try to get back to the root of that, if I can. And once I figure out what that is, I try to process and heal that in the present day. So often it links to an experience as a child where I didn't feel heard, or I needed to feel like I needed to prove like love, or I needed to something like that, basically. So with that, I try to talk to that younger version of myself to try to say like, oh, it's okay. You were kind of coping with, the knowledge that you're basically coping with the experience in the best way you could. And I try to like talk to that self, and in the present day I feel like that really helps shift lots of unhealthy patterns, if that makes sense. And also with like artists and as creatives, I feel like it's really easy to like ruminate and get stuck in those thinking patterns, especially as creatives. So I feel like my best way to get out of that loop is basically to dedicate time to basically the real world. That's like not really my art. So I need to kind of like, I check in on myself to get out of that artistic headspace and just kind of like, get back in with the real world. And also like one thing that really helps me, and I feel like really helps lots of people, is this idea that we can't control most things, and we can only control how we react to things. And like, for example, like, you know, the world is really like chaotic and uncertain at the moment. We can't control that. We can only control like what we do with ourselves and how we treat our communities, and kind of, basically. So that's what I think. Like, if something is out of my control, I just remind myself of that. And I just think, how can I best prepare myself for this situation that is out of my control, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
We're talking about location and food. They're so important for your culture, but also the work that you write about as well. And I'm curious, as we lead to wrapping up, is there like a location or a particular dish that you kind of sit with and think about, and that's kind of like a reconnection with the positive side of your heritage? Is there any ones that you kind of think about?
Yeah, this is a really beautiful question, because I actually really like, despite all the difficult elements of it, like I really love my culture, actually, so that this is... And lots of that love does come out through food and through the weather and through, you know, connecting with the natural environment. So yeah, with food, I would say like this dish, which is like salted egg, seafood, or like even fusion salted egg stuff, for example, like salted egg, like pasta. And also like, what else? And also lots of like, like banana leaf curries, because my I'm a quarter Indian, and my grandma lives and lived with my parents like growing up. So growing up, she would love to always cook like curries, and that banana leaf element was always like part of it, because that's very typical in like Southeast Asia. So yeah, banana leaf curries, that like always really reminds me of like home and like the tropics, and like yeah, small as like the grass, like always just whenever I go home, even small things like the rain and the grass, like that always just it's so different from the environment here. So that always makes me feel like yeah, just connected to the environment, actually. Yeah.
Siri, I've really appreciated being able to talk with you through your work. There's so much that I've,
Much.
yeah, you're welcome. For people who are interested in finding out more about your work, where can they find your work?
So they can find me on Instagram. My account name is Poems by Suri, and they can also find my book like on Amazon, and in Australia it's available at Readings and Dimmicks, and yeah, Readings, Dimmicks, Amazon, and basically like various retailers where you normally get books, and yeah, so that's where you can find me.
So grateful to have been able to spend time talking with you about your work. I know I could talk with you for hours because there's so many stories, and that's the beauty about poetry. And
And thank you so much for having me today, and for taking the time out of your day to interview me and talk about my work. Like, I really appreciate it, and like, I love what you do, and like, thank you so much.
thanks for listening to this chat with Suri Chan, and thank you, Suri, as well for your time with the interview. For more information about Suri's work, visit surichan.com and find her work on Instagram at Poems by Suri. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your culture-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and I'll see you on the next one.